night, people. My love and I are night people.
Everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, ChicagoJazz.com. Welcome to Talkin' Jazz, episode 116. We are here at Johnny O's, right here in Bridgeport, 35th and Morgan. Thanks for hosting us. Thanks for the hot dogs. Thanks for the fries. And I am so happy that Dennis Luxon and Petra Van Nouse, they are here. They have a brand new CD coming out. It's actually out. And they are doing a CD release show October 10th at the Jazz Showcase. Guys, I'm so happy you guys could make it. You're like on a press tour today, so I'm glad you could slide me in. They were just at WDCB. They probably did six morning shows. Good Morning America, I think I saw you there earlier today. I mean, this is like, you know, what a coup. Thanks to our producer for getting them to come in. I'm happy you're here, and I'm happy we're talking about this new release. So let's talk a little bit about this. This new release, Because We're Night People, it was recorded live at Piano Forte. Right. How long ago was it? It was fairly recently, I would imagine, right?
It seems so long ago now. When?
March.
It was recently.
All right, so it was recorded in March.
Yeah.
And it just came out. So let's talk a little bit about this. Now, you and Dennis have been performing together for quite a while, I think, as a duo. And yeah. I know you sometimes you allow your husband to join you, Andy Brown, as a trio, and then bass players and things like that. But this is just a duo.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's got 13 tunes. I want to talk about the song selection. But first off, how hard is it to do a full show as just a duo? I mean, does a lot go into the planning of the repertoire? Does a lot go into the planning of the grooves and things like that? Because you want the whole thing to flow, but it's right. just the two of you. You're kind of exposed at that point.
Well, I think it's different. So this was a show.
Okay.
And we play a lot of gigs together. Like, we have a fairly steady like duo at a restaurant. And there it's a little different,
right? Yeah, sure. You know, yeah.
I mean, it's not quite background music because there's certainly people who come to hear us, but it's not like a concert setting, which is different. And so I'd say for something like this, it is more a concert. There's more thinking about having a theme or songs that go together, and some kind of logic behind
yeah.
things. And having it at Piano Forte was nice because the sound is really good. The piano is great.
That's a really wonderful spot mm-hmm. to hear a group because it's a straight listening room. The piano is unbelievable, obviously, and the acoustics in there. But then they also are able to record it, right? I mean, they have everything there as far as this goes. So that was just like, but the thing I love about this, it's like one take, right? I mean, it's like, here you go.
Oh, yeah, sure, exactly.
Which is kind of scary, you know. We did two nights just to be safe.
Be on the safe side?
But okay. It ended up being that the first night was almost like a rehearsal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because we took everything from the second night. But we recorded 17 tunes each night, and we chose 13, so.
How did you guys decide on the tunes? Are these tunes that you guys have been playing over the years, or are these tunes that you're adding in? Because obviously, I don't think some of these tunes, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, I can't imagine some of these tunes being played necessarily at a restaurant where people are listening. I mean, there's a lot of texture to some of these tunes, right?
And as far as texture goes, having a really nice piano makes a big difference.
Because
I'm not even going to try to go for some of the same kind of things on a keyboard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which
right.
is the situation we're in at our steady gig. I mean, that's fine, but I mean, you can't really do subtle
right.
colors in the same way.
Well, you're as a piano player, you probably, you know, on an acoustic instrument, your ears probably open up completely differently,
yes.
and your creative juices probably get going even more. And then being in a situation like Piano Forte, where it's just a dead, silent listening space, that's got to be like magic for a piano player, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different, yes.
Yeah.
And so you can play colors and not just think, oh, I'm going to play these chords. You know, you're really going for very different kind of sounds rather than just say, oh, playing the chord is enough. It's the color that's important.
When you're backing Petra, how is the voice influencing what you're playing? Mm. I mean, you got the acoustic room and everything, but how is the voice influencing what you're playing?
There's probably two ways that, you know. One way is the lyrics, depending on a specific word, it might influence what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that on certain cuts, like references to other songs because of a specific word. Like the opening for Street of Dreams is
midnight.
Right. So the intro for that is a little snippet of Round Midnight, so that when she sings midnight,
okay,
you might be thinking, oh, we're going, it's going to be Round Midnight. Oh, no, it's just midnight kind of causes some kind of resonance,
cool,
if you know the references. But even more importantly, I think, for a lot of these songs, it's playing the phrasing and playing Petra's breathing.
Ah, okay.
You know, the chords that have to come at a certain place that have to do not with just rhythm, you know, but really phrasing. But again, I mean, phrasing is tied up with breathing, and it's...
I never thought of that. That's
I never thought of that either.
Yeah.
Thank you,
I mean, really, it's very important.
Oh, why? I can see. Yeah, that, I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense. So then when you're playing with different vocalists, that's ingrained when you're listening. You're trying to, obviously, if there's a trio or something, it's a little different. But if it's just solos, piano and vocal, you're really listening for that.
And the
every
space
vocalist
is almost
must,
like, that's interesting, right? It's the silence. It's the breath.
Yes, exactly.
That's cool.
Different singers are very different. I mean, Petra is very good about, you know, telling the story of the lyrics in a way that does involve phrasing and breathing more than just keeping, like, the groove. So this is kind of a storytelling album in that sense.
Oh, okay. You know, that makes a lot of sense.
Some albums you put it on, you know, hey, it's just a groove album. But this is different.
And it's probably when you're, you know, vocal and piano, and Petra, I'll ask you this, that storytelling element is easier to do for a vocalist because you're not, everything's not just cooking straight ahead, or you're not worried about everything else. You're really able to get into the lyrics more, do you think?
That's, I agree. Wow. Yes, you should have been a singer.
Oh, man. You should hear me sing. I shouldn't be a singer.
I agree with that, actually. I mean, I love all, I'm so lucky to be able to play in different configurations, and I really enjoy all of it, but I must say, I think my favorite setting is duo because of that. Kind of what you're saying. It feels, well, number one, more intimate. It's like if you're having a conversation at a big party with a bunch of people, that's one thing. But if you're really just talking to one person, you can get into it more.
Does that goes into the tune selection, I would imagine, then, right? Because if you're talking about lyric and you're talking about all the phrasing and the texture, and then obviously going from one tune into another, especially when you're thinking about a concert setting and then and now a CD. I mean, are these all tunes that you have been playing for a long time, or
not
are there
all
some
of them,
new ones?
Most of them. But then Dennis, we were at a gig and Dennis said, what would you think about making a CD? And for me, it was a great honor because just for someone like Dennis to be interested in making a CD with me, wow. So I was very, immediately he said, well, and you said something about having a theme, which I don't really think, I guess my other albums don't really have a theme. You said, you want to have a theme or something. And then immediately, because I guess in my mind, you know, as a singer, well, a lot of places ask for themes. So I'm always thinking of themes.
Right,
and
like,
I have
let's
so
do
many
the
songs,
Ella
like,
songbook or
right,
whatever,
like,
right, yeah.
Here, let's do a spring show or the, you know, whatever. So I was just, I'd had this idea, I guess, for a while about some night songs. And then it was kind of, you know, whenever you do come up with a theme, then you think of, ooh, here are some songs I've always wanted to learn but never had that kick to. So one was actually the title song, which is Night People. I had heard June Christie version of that, and I had always liked it. And then Judy Roberts had mentioned it to me a few years ago, and had actually given me a sheet music on it. And I never learned it, but I'd always kind of be like, I want to learn this.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the impetus.
Is it a tough tune? I mean, I had never heard that song.
It's kind of tough, but it's also just, it's a different song, but to me it was very logical. I don't know why, it hit me.
It sounds a little haunting on the recording. I mean, it's like one of those tunes. It's like, whoa. I mean, it's like a deep
it
tune.
It is.
You know?
A lot of these tunes are kind of like that, which is kind of why, maybe not even completely consciously, but it does kind of, like you said, it to me, this is the first album that I have made that it's kind of like a one long story in a way. And someone even said that, like, is it the beginning of the night to the end of the night? Or something? I mean, it's not like that, but, you know, it's something kind of, you know, something like that where there are some stories in there, and stories kind of that we can relate to, because Night People's kind of a hipster kind of thing about, you know, being in smoky bars and, you know, et cetera, things that we know. And there's another song on there called The Piano Player, 1001 Saloons, which that's not a
I've never heard
jazz
of that too. I've never heard
song.
That too. But yeah, that's a great title.
There's I mean, it's just about playing nightly in different bars, you know. We're basically a vehicle for the drinks in some ways. You know what I mean?
Well,
but that's how it was initially
sure.
probably conceived, you know.
Sure. Things have tapered out a little bit since everybody, like, you know, the old clubs aren't around that used to start at 10 o'clock at night and go until...
Right.
Although you play the Green Mill gig, which starts at 1 o'clock in the morning, or 12:30,
yeah,
right?
Well, our gig starts at 1:30. 1:30 to 3:30, basically.
Ish. Yeah.
3:45.
Dennis is part of the, what is it called, the Green Mill Quartet.
Right.
And that's the late night set on Friday night, Saturday morning, whichever way you want to say it. And it's a jam session, too. So if you can really play, it's a pro jam session. So if you can really play, it's great to go in and sit in because you get to sit in with people like Dennis, who's been, you know, world-class players. Some guy named Eric Schneider, who's on saxophone, who was in here eating Polish sausages a couple of weeks ago, but he hasn't been back. And great band. But, you know, and talking about that, I mean, you got your chops probably coming up doing jam sessions and learning tunes and all that stuff. Did you originally come up in Chicago?
Well, I grew up in the area.
Okay.
Suburbs, Arlington Heights, and then Naperville when it was a farm town.
Oh, yeah.
And then I went to school in Champaign as a civil engineering student. And I had been playing in mostly, I mean, I was interested in jazz and listening to jazz, but playing in rock bands with friends like junior high and high school. And I went to Champaign as a civil engineering student. And before classes started, they had orientation week. And one thing I heard was the Illinois, you know, jazz band. And at that time, it was not your typical college jazz band with just your, you know, undergraduate students
right.
playing. There were a number of ringers in that band. Ron DeWar, who was a fantastic saxophone player. Charlie Brown, you know.
Okay, sure.
Charlie Brougham, who became Charlie Brougham later, was playing. Rick Bendel, fantastic trumpet player, playing charts by a really great musician, Jim Knapp, who was living in Seattle, who's still there, I guess, but who had left Champaign the year before I got there, but that stamped the band with a really particular, you know, kind of advanced, you know, color and sensibility. Anyway, I heard that and it was like, civil engineering, that's gone. You know? But I didn't become really a music student. I took as many music classes as I could. I just hung out.
Yeah.
You know, I took like some. There was a really wonderful. There were a couple great piano players. Jim McNeely was there.
I was going to ask if Jim McNeely was down there.
As a student, a couple of years older than me. And then Ron Elliston, who was on the faculty there, was an excellent piano player who I took a class with, and he said, "Oh, stop listening to Oscar Peterson. Listen to Bill Evans." Kind of changed my. And I like both, but it kind of changed my. The orientation of my listening and practicing for, you know, a number of years.
Well, a lot of guys, you must have been down there with a lot of the guys that are up here now,
sure.
Right?
I got there the same year as Kelly Sill, Dan DiLorenzo, Ed Peterson. So there are some other people that say, oh, you know who else? Who never really made it up here, but was a great player, was John Burr, bass player. Who, you know, from New York, who actually was a year younger than us, but got there the same year. So there's a lot of people, as well as these older players who were there. Well, Phil Gritteau was a couple years older than
Campbell was
us.
Probably around the scene a
Campbell
little.
Went,
I don't think he went
a little
to
bit
school.
Later.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, in fact, John might be a year younger. So, but and he wasn't in Champaign. He was in
Right.
London,
yeah.
But he was certainly around and close to a bunch of those.
Yeah.
Well, so and Joel Spencer was younger, so he didn't get there for a year or two. And Eric had gone to, you know, North Texas, and he got Champaign a little after me. But there was a fantastic, and Marlene Rosenberg got there, you know, later. There was quite a thriving scene. Mike Coker was there, but again, later. But for a decade, well, actually, there was quite a scene before we got there, and that continued, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how incredible is that? You get down there, and all that's happening. You're going to go to civil engineering, and then you start hanging out. So really,
and I didn't graduate from there. I just hung out for
you
like
just
six
hung
years.
Out for
I mean, I got a couple years of school in, But basically, I wasn't interested in that. And they didn't have a jazz studies program, right?
It was all classical, probably, if you're going to graduate, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So all those or
music
were
ed.
There?
Or music ed.
So okay. Another person that got there the same year, Art Davis.
Of course.
And so, he and Ed were, I think, both in like music ed programs.
Right.
That's
what Joel graduated from, Tool Spencer, with a music
ed. So the whole Chicago jazz scene, basically, is now was there, and there wasn't even a jazz department.
Right.
That's hilarious.
No, but there was a jazz department in the sense that there was a jazz band.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there were all these players. There was a scene, play, there were some clubs to play at, and certainly there were some classes, but you couldn't get a degree in it. So, mm-hmm. there was a jazz, keyboard mm-hmm. class, you could take, I think, jazz arranging and stuff, but you couldn't.
Well, and it's interesting because now, obviously, you go $100,000 in debt to learn how to play jazz now,
right.
And I mean, we all know how that ends. So... But not to turn anybody off from school or anything, just, manage your debt. But you're down there, and it kind of leads me back to the jam session thing and being in Chicago and learning. I mean, you learned from playing, from listening, from hanging out, listening. Did you do a lot of transcribing, too?
Oh, yes.
Massive amounts?
Oh, that's, we were all doing that.
So that's probably the key, right? I mean, you've got to learn how the masters are playing these chords over the changes and what they're doing to it. Is that...
I mean, I think so. I mean, there's a couple different approaches people take. I mean, what was prevalent among, the people I was with there was, very specifically transcribing. I mean, just to write it down or something, that's not the key. I mean, the key is actually knowing how to reproduce something. I mean, I've heard people who are not, I mean, like Benny Green, I mean, the piano player, I mean, he talks about listening quite intently and sort of, imitating things without being specifically nailing note for note.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we were interested in...
I think that's one of the hardest things, and you do a lot of teaching too, I think, mm-hmm. still. Because I know you used to. I don't know if you're still studios and stuff.
I have some private students, but I've retired from teaching at Columbia.
Okay. But I mean, that's one of the hardest things, I think, as a student. And I think it's also how you learn, right? Because like with me playing drum set, I would transcribe stuff. I could play it down if I was looking at the music, but if I sat down and we started playing in a trio setting, I don't care if I looked at that music 1,000,000,000 times, I couldn't put it into the music and have my own voice. That's that connection, right? So, I mean, that's the hardest thing, I think, as a musician to have that happen. Is that what you see with either students or even yourself?
Well, I think there's a number of aspects with that, but imagine you're starting with the idea that music is like language. So how do you learn language? You learn by listening and imitating your parents or people around mm-hmm. you. That's how you pick up things. But you see kids like just sitting up, blah, 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 and they're trying to reproduce things that they're saying.
Right.
So as the idea of transcribing is trying to do that in a very focused way. But if that's all you've got, like, hey, I can play this just like, whoever, like Wynton Kelly or Art Tatum, it can be fantastic, but it doesn't help you talking to somebody else, mm-hmm. playing in a band, accompanying a singer. So somehow that has to be assimilated, that information that you've learned by transcribing has to be assimilated so it's now you able to use that vocabulary as is appropriate, but as appropriate to a particular context.
Right.
So you do want to, when you transcribe something, break things down so that you're finding out what the words are and being able to use those words in different ways in a flexible, appropriate way. So that's the problem or the key to practicing, if that's how you're learning by transcribing, is to make that stuff your own in a flexible way and not just throw in your licks no matter what the context is, but you have to know where they're appropriate. So that takes a while.
All right, so I'm glad we talked about this because this was really fascinating, actually. And I think it's very important for everybody to understand where everybody's coming from and kind of the thought process, because when you get into something like this, and like we talked about off camera, this new recording, because we're night people, it was recorded at Piano Forte just a duo. Mm-hmm. And before we came on camera, I mean, you're really just exposed. I mean, it's you guys right there. And I think this whole recording really came out wonderfully. By the way, there's a review of this recording just out this week on ChicagoJazzMagazine.com. Cool. And it's a good one, so check that out. And, of course, they have their CD release show coming up, Jazz Showcase, October 10th, Wednesday, 806 South Plymouth Court, JazzShowcase.com. Petra, what's your website? Do you want to tell everybody where they can pick it up?
PetraSings.com. P-E-T-R-A. Sings.
PetraSings.com, and the recordings are available on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon, through your website, everywhere in between. And at gigs. I was going to say,
Live gigs are the best place to come.
So if they cannot make Wednesday,
yes,
which they have to, but if they can't, where else can they see you guys performing together? Where's your steady at?
We play every... Well, I play every Sunday at this place called Mancini's in Oak Park, mm-hmm. 6 to 9, and then Dennis is there with me, I would say, every other Sunday and then some other times, too. So you're there like 75% of the time, basically. Yeah,
feels like the end.
And then, of course, you can get all the information because I know you're playing all over the place. And, Dennis, do you have a website or anything we should plug?
I have a website, but... You know, I never post gigs. I should, but you wouldn't know where I'm at.
Well, we know that you're at the Green Mill usually at 1:30 in the morning, Saturday morning.
I think on my website that's the only gig that's...
There it is. So if they make it over there, he'll tell you where else he's playing that week.
Yes, exactly.
That's
we play
a lot of other places, too, all over that's on my website, so...
Yeah,
I love to play with Dennis whenever we can. So.
Petra is playing like 7 nights a week, sometimes twice on Sundays. No. So check her out. She's the hardest working musician in the city next to Judy Roberts because we can't say Judy doesn't play every single night because I'll get the email. So hi, Judy. All right. So anyways, guys, I'm so glad you came down. Of course, Wednesday, Petra Van Noyce. Petra Van Noyce, Dennis Luxon. Jazz Showcase. And again, if they don't see you on Wednesday, hopefully they'll see you somewhere. And as I always say, if I don't see you somewhere soon, hopefully I will see you somewhere out on the scene.